Would you be okay with them having Tomahawk missiles and the threat that that would pose and the possible escalation it would pose? Because there was a time when you were very much in favor of, you know, backing away from this situation in terms of our support of Ukraine.
Well, one of the things I've always said, Martha, is I wanted the Europeans to step up in a big way. I wanted us, the United States, to stop shoveling money and weaponry to a conflict that was so far away, when I felt like the Europeans, with all due respect for them, were not actually taking their fair share of the burden. Because of the president's leadership, you now have the Europeans buying weaponry from the United States as opposed to us giving it. And you asked this question about Tomahawks. It's something the president's going to make the final determination on. What the president is going to do is what's in the best interest of the United States of America. That's the driving light between his foreign policy decisions, between his defense policy decisions, and that will be the same heuristic that we apply to how we answer this question about Tomahawks. I'll let the president speak to it, but I know that we're having conversations this very minute about that issue.
This is my video update on this Monday midday, September the 29th, coming to you from Yerevan, Armenia. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with long-range missiles to Ukraine. Tomahawk missiles going to Ukraine. J.D. Vance was speaking to Fox News, and he said that the Trump administration is considering sending Tomahawk missiles to the Zelensky regime. Keith Kellogg was also making the rounds on the media channels, and he said that long-range missiles are being considered by the Trump administration to be sent to the Zelensky regime. Both Trump officials said that the final decision to send the long-range missiles to Ukraine will be made by the president, but going off of the statements, not so much from Kellogg, but from Vance, the vibe that I got was that that the decision has already been made and that those long-range missiles, those Tomahawk missiles, will be sent to Ukraine if they have not already been sent to Ukraine. And of course, when we are talking about Tomahawk missiles, long-range missiles being launched into Russia, we're not talking about Ukraine launching those long-range missiles. It would have to be the United States launching those Tomahawk missiles into Russia. So the vibe that I got from Vance was that the decision has effectively been made, and those missiles are going to be launched into the Russian Federation. They're going to say that Ukraine fired those missiles, but we know better. We know that that's not possible. This would be a United States Trump long-range missile attack on the Russian Federation. Going off of Keith Kellogg's interview and the statements that he made, I got the vibe that the Trump administration feels like they can launch these missiles into Russia, attack Russia with long-range Tomahawk missiles, and because of Russia's past restraint, that they'll be able to launch those missiles and that Putin will do nothing. That is the vibe that I got from the statements from Keith Kellogg. They're more than ready. The Trump administration is more than ready to once again test Russia's red lines. And they feel pretty confident that when they test the long-range missile Tomahawk red line, that Putin will not respond. He will back off. And they also feel that that this will bring more pressure to Russia so that they can get leverage over Russia as they try to negotiate a conflict freeze.
I just want to clarify. Are you saying, though, that it is the president's position that Ukraine can conduct long-range strikes into Russia, that has been authorized by the president?
I think reading what he has said, mm-hmm. and reading what Vice President Vance has said, as well as Secretary Rubio, the answer is yes. Use the ability to hit deep. There are no such things as sanctuaries. That's one of the reasons I believe that this last week, and it has been confirmed, that President Zelensky asked President Trump to get Tomahawk missiles, which give you a depth They're really good systems. America makes the best systems in the world.
Are we giving him the Tomahawks?
Well, that decision has not been made, but he's asked. I know that President Zelensky did, in fact, ask for them, which was confirmed by a social media post by Vice President Vance. That's going to be up to the president to do it.
So that's the vibe that I got from Kellogg. The vibe that I got from Vance was that the decision has been made to justify the decision to the American people. Vance had to tell a whole bunch of lies to Fox News. He said that Russia is not seeking peace. They refuse to sit down for bilateral talks with Ukraine, for trilateral talks with Ukraine and Trump. He said that the United States is seeking peace and they want an end to the conflict. And because Putin does not want to sit down for bilateral talks, we need to send Tomahawk missiles to Project Ukraine, or we're considering sending Tomahawk missiles to Project Ukraine. It was a bunch of lies coming from Vance, and this twisted logic of in order to get to peace, we want peace as the United States, and in order to get to peace and to bring Putin to think about bilateral or trilateral talks, we need to attack Russia with long-range Tomahawk missiles. That's pretty much the logic being used by the Trump administration and what J.D. Vance said on Fox News yesterday.
You ask what's changed. I think what's changed is the reality on the ground, where the Russians are killing a lot of people, they're losing a lot of people, they don't have much to show for it. We remain committed to peace, but it takes two to tango. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, the Russians have refused to sit down with any bilateral meetings with Ukrainians. They've refused to sit down with any trilateral meetings where the president or some other member of the administration could sit down with the Russians and the Ukrainians. So our view is we want peace here. We've been actively pursuing peace from the very beginning of the administration, but the Russians have got to wake up and accept reality here. A lot of people are dying. They don't have a lot to show for it. How many more people are they willing to lose? How many more people are they willing to kill for very little, if any, gain in the military advantage on the ground there? I think the answer is hopefully not that much, but certainly our attitude here is we're going to keep on working for peace, and we hope the Russians actually wake up to the reality on the ground.
Well, a Russian position has never been to not seek a negotiation, a diplomatic negotiation. They're in favor of talks, whether it's bilateral talks or trilateral talks with the United States. Moscow actually invited Russia actually invited Trump to Moscow yesterday for the second or third time. Russia has issued a formal invitation to the Trump administration for the U.S. president to visit Moscow. They're for negotiations. They're for talks. For talks, the Russians, but they just don't want those talks to be empty talks and empty negotiations. They don't want Putin to just sit down at a table with Trump and Zelensky and to discuss a ceasefire and territory. That's not the job of the Russian president. That's not the job of the U.S. president. Russia's position is that a lot of preparation and negotiations about the details of some sort of a bilateral meeting or some sort of a settlement need to be prepared at lower diplomatic levels. And then once everything is agreed on and they have some sort of plan in place and some sort of framework and document, then all the leaders can sit down and sign off on what has been prepared by lower level diplomats and officials. That's been Russia's position. Now, that's the normal way that you conduct these types of negotiations. But Trump wants to sell a story. The Trump White House wants to sell a story, like the story that he sold with Armenia and Azerbaijan, Armenia and Azerbaijan, or Cambodia and Albania, or Cambodia and Azerbaijan, right? Where Trump says that the two leaders were sitting far apart and they've been fighting for 30 years. And then I told the two leaders to sit closer together. And then when they sat closer together, they decided to sign a peace deal, right? That's the story that Trump wants to sell. And then he can go and say that this is my 9th or my 10th peace deal. Now give me a Nobel Peace Prize. I like it. I like that Nobel Peace Prize. Give it to me. Yeah, so that's how Trump wants to sell this thing, but that's not the proper way to conduct complicated, very complicated negotiations. So anyway, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that this is just a bluff from the Trump administration, and everything that J.D. Vance said was just a way to misdirect, so that the United States, that the Trump administration can walk away from Project Ukraine. But I don't think so. I don't think so. I believe that the decision has been made to test Russia's red line. The latest decision to test Russia's red line, which I'm kind of split on. You know, I said in past videos that if and when Tomahawk missiles are launched into the Russian Federation, long range missiles that can go 2,000 to 3,000 kilometers. When they're launched into the Russian Federation, I said that Russia's going to respond with Oreshniks, most likely inside of Ukraine. Maybe Russia doesn't respond. That's a possibility. You know, maybe the U.S. decides to test this red line, and they're right. Putin shows restraint, and Tomahawk missiles are fired into Russia, and Russia decides to not retaliate. That's also a possibility. So I'm kind of split on this now, 50-50, that if and when the Tomahawks are launched, part of me says Russia's gonna strike back hard with Oreshniks. Another part of me says, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Putin does nothing and just lets it go. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I hope this is all a bluff. I hope this Tomahawk talk is all one big bluff and misdirection from the Trump White House, and that they do decide to wash their hands of Project Ukraine. Vance claims Russia refused meetings with Trump. Moscow has turned down trilateral talks with Washington and Kiev, according to the U.S. vice president, and the U.S. is considering Tomahawks for Kiev. Washington is looking at selling the missiles to other NATO nations that would hand them over to Kiev, the vice president has said. And from Keith Kellogg, there are no such things as sanctuaries. Ukraine can conduct strikes deep within Russian territory. Yeah, so Kellogg was saying that there's no safety in the Russian Federation, no such thing as sanctuaries, no safe regions, no targets are off limits. And he said that the United States is coordinating with Ukraine to put a list together of all the targets deep into Russia, very deep into Russia, that the Tomahawks can strike at. The part that worries me a lot about this is that they're going to try some sort of decapitation strike. You know, Zelensky's talking a lot about hitting the Kremlin and going after Russian officials. And we know that the United States, the Trump administration, they like to use the tactic of decapitation strikes. This is something that they're now employing and something that they have sanctioned. When it comes to Israel, they have given the green light for decapitation strikes. So this is something that the Trump White House likes to do. So it would not surprise me if they do try to hit the Russian leadership either. That's a possibility. I think it's a very, very small, low probability, low possibility. But given the past actions of the Trump White House, you know, you can't rule it out. You cannot rule such things out. But Washington, according to Vance, looking at selling the missiles to other NATO nations. They continue with this lie, that they're selling weapons and they're going to sell the Tomahawks to other NATO nations. Such a lie. First of all, the United States is NATO, so if they're selling weapons to NATO, they're just selling it to themselves. And the other part to this lie is that NATO does not purchase weapons. So what they're really talking about is selling weapons to NATO member states. And the NATO member states are all broke and bankrupt. And so the only place that NATO member states are going to get money from is the United States. So there is no selling of weapons to NATO. There is no selling of weapons to other EU NATO member states. The money to purchase these weapons is coming from the United States. Period. Full stop. End of story. And yeah, Trump is gonna make these claims that he's not giving the weapons like the Biden administration. He's selling the weapons, and the United States is making a profit from selling the weapons and stuff like that. And I like it. I like it. We're making a profit from selling our beautiful weapons, and I like it. But that's all one big freaking lie. Any way you slice it or dice it or cut it up, it is the United States purchasing weapons from the U.S. weapons manufacturers. Weapons that they don't even have, to be quite honest. But another false statement that Vance told Fox News. And staying on the topic of selling weapons, according to Politico, Alensky says that Ukraine is very close to signing a mega deal for arms purchases from the United States, a $90 billion mega deal. First of all, Ukraine doesn't have $90 billion to purchase weapons from the United States. Ukraine doesn't have $1 to purchase weapons from the United States. Ukraine is broke, man. The United States pays for everything in Ukraine, everything. Salaries, expenses, whatever. Whatever costs Ukraine racks up, the United States pays for it. So there is no $90 billion from Alensky to purchase weapons. So what they're talking about, once again, is the United States selling weapons to NATO, $90 billion, and then NATO giving those weapons to Ukraine. That's what they're talking about. Alensky says that they're in talks with the United States. They've made progress already. And they're deep into talks, technical talks with the United States. They provided a list of weapons and everything they want. And by the end of October, they're going to meet and finalize this $90 billion weapons purchase. Once again, it's the United States purchasing weapons from the United States. That's what we're talking about here. But Alensky making a list to the United States and telling them what he wants. It's just ridiculous, man. The United States is going to give what they believe they need to give in order to hurt and damage Russia, right? That's what the United States is going to give. Alensky's not making any lists. Alensky's not commanding anything. The people that are commanding and running the conflict are collective West NATO, U.S. generals and U.S. command. So they're the ones that are going to decide what weapons go where and what weapons the U.S. has to send, right? Because the U.S. is running very low on weapons. But the $90 billion is more of the United States purchasing weapons from the United States. That's what we're talking about here. And in this package, according to Alensky, there is long-range missiles in this $90 billion package. A lot of people are going to become very, very wealthy from all of this stuff that's going on. A lot of billionaires are going to be minted from all of this. So the UK, the ex MI5 chief of the UK, he came out with a statement, according to Sky News, saying that the UK is already at war with Russia. That's an interesting statement from the ex MI5 chief, who says those who think the UK is already at war with Russia may be right. Britain is possibly already at war with Russia, former head of British intelligence. Since the start of the conflict in Ukraine and other things I have read, the UK's defense advisor, Dr. Fiona Hill, may be right in saying that we are already in a state of war with Russia, said Manningham Butler. So he's referencing Dr. Fiona Hill in his statement about being at war with Russia, the UK being at war with Russia. We're talking about the same Fiona Hill that was part of the whole Russiagate scandal during Trump's first term. These are the people that the Trump White House has aligned himself with. He's now aligning himself with the UK, with MI5, with British Intel, which was also knee-deep in Russiagate. Halper and Mifsud and all of that stuff. And, of course, you have Fiona Hill, who was also very deeply involved in the entire Russiagate scandal. But here's the Trump administration aligning itself with all of these people. While at the same time, they're going after Comey, possibly Brennan, possibly Clapper. So that's an update there. How about the elections in Moldova? As expected, no surprise to anyone. Maia Sandu, the EU Collective West candidate, her party barely came out ahead in the parliament elections in Moldova. I believe the latest count was they got something like 50.2% of the vote for parliament seats in Moldova. And the votes went exactly as one would expect it to go, in that the opposition parties, they were ahead in the beginning. When you were counting votes inside of Moldova, they were ahead. And then as the votes from overseas started to come in, then Sandu's party started to pull ahead. Obviously, there were all kinds of tricks and suppression that took place. There are reports about cutting off bridges from Transnistria to prevent people to vote. I can't confirm that. I'm just telling you what some reports claim. There are reports that in certain areas and regions where voters were going to be very much anti-Sandu and anti-EU, that their ballots were getting thrown away, that their votes were getting thrown away, that the ballot boxes were already stuffed full ahead of time. I mean, you're getting all of these claims of election interference and election fraud, but you know, it went exactly as everyone thought it was going to go. The EU, the Collective West, there was no way that they were going to allow Sandu to not get a majority in parliament. Moldova is their last chance, their last hope, at least for the time being. It appears to be their last chance to get a second front with Russia. The BBC, they describe the vote. One second, let me pull up the way they've phrased the outcome of the elections in Moldova. I know I have it bookmarked somewhere, the BBC title. Here we go. Found it. Pro-EU party in Moldova wins election mired in claims of Russian interference. You see how they phrase it? Russian interference. Pro-EU party wins in an election mired by Russian interference. We had to ban parties and ban opposition candidates because of Russian interference, right? We had to do all of these things because of the imaginary Russian interference. So that's how they framed the election in Moldova. Pavel Durov, the Telegram founder, he put out an interesting post on X, where he said that when he was in France, I don't even know, is he still in France or is he not in France? I don't know. But he said when he was in France and being held by Macron and the French authorities, that the intel agencies in France, they asked him during the presidential elections in Moldova, they asked Durov to cancel a bunch of Telegram channels that were anti Maia Sandu. And he said that he looked at some of the channels and they were indeed meddling in the elections, or they were up to no good. So he did ban some channels. But then the French intel came back to Pavel Durov, and they asked him to ban more channels. And he said he looked at the other channels that they wanted him to ban, and there was nothing wrong with the other Telegram channels. And he told them no, but he said that the French intel, they told him that that if he bans all the channels that they request, including the ones that he does not want to ban, the ones that are not violating any terms of service for Telegram, French intel agents told Durov that that they will help him in his court case and they will do all kinds of favors for him. And that was an interesting post from Durov. Actually, Musk replied to Durov's claims on X by saying, wow, that's what Musk said. So we'll do one more story and then we'll wrap up this Monday video. And in Switzerland, we had a vote for digital IDs and they have been approved, barely approved. But nonetheless, people in Switzerland have voted and they have agreed to digital IDs. The digital ID plan in Switzerland is not mandatory. And from what I understand, the user data will be stored only on the mobile device. That's my understanding of how their digital ID is going to work. So you're not required to have it. You can use a paper ID. You can use your card, your ID card, like normal. But the entire digital ID system is going to be in place. And the data, I believe the UK said they were going to store, was the data going to be stored centrally for the UK digital ID plan? Did they get that far in describing how it was going to work? The Swiss plan is saying that your data is only stored on your mobile phone. So there's going to be no central storage of your information. But you know, it's a slippery slope. Once they get you to approve the actual concept, the idea, the functioning of a digital ID, then they can move the goalposts, right, further and further, and eventually they get the ID so that it's centrally stored, and eventually they get it to a point where it becomes mandatory, and they phase out the ID card or the paper ID. This is how they always do things. Step by step, right? They got people to agree to the concept of a digital ID. So now they're going to work on phasing out the ID card and getting everything to be centrally stored and phasing out your privacy, chipping away at your privacy and the storing of your data. They're going to chip away at that, and eventually they'll get it to the point where they control your data, your identity. That's how they do things. So very, very bad news for Switzerland. I think they've been suckered. I think they have been suckered, but time will tell. So we can do a clown world. I don't have much of a clown world today, but we'll talk about Trump's gold, right? Man, music everywhere. Let me move. Let me move away from the music. All right, let's talk about Trump's gold. So he posted on Truth Social the amazing, perfect gold in the Oval Office and how leaders, when they visit the Oval Office, are amazed. They freak out at the gold that the U.S. possesses in the White House. Some of the highest quality 24-karat gold used in the Oval Office and Cabinet Room of the White House. Foreign leaders and everyone else freak out when they see the quality and beauty. Best Oval Office ever in terms of success and look, President DJT. So that's Trump talking up the gold, the gold at the Oval Office. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Telegram and Rumble. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch, like what I'm wearing in this video update. I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.